Senators added language to the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act that's causing some in the government and in industry to worry. The provision centers on giving the Homeland Security Department emergency cyber powers over federal and contractor networks. In his weekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, our executive editor, Jason Miller, writes about why some are so concerned, and he joins me now with more. Hi there, Jason.
Hello, Jared.
And in the notebook, you go to some pains to point out that you're using the word worry advisedly instead of a less strong word. What power does this provision give to DHS, and why are vendors a little freaked out here?
Well, what's interesting is that it's a very much a tucked away provision. I mean, I had to look for it. I had to get help to find it even. But it's section 209, and basically I'm going to read it to you, so it'll be a little legalese here, so you'll forgive me. But it's basically lawmakers would give Homeland Security Secretary the power to issue an emergency directive when there is, quote, a substantial threat. Now, this would be, and this would also mean that the Homeland Security Secretary would have the ability to take, quote, any lawful action with respect to the operation of the information system, including such systems owned and operated by another entity on behalf of an agency that collects, processes, stores, transmits, disseminates, or otherwise maintains agency information for the purpose of protecting that information from or mitigating an information security threat. So long story short, more straightforward, what this means is DHS determines that there is a cyber threat, an imminent cyber threat. They can go into any agency's network or any contractor's network which holds federal data and take actions to protect it. Now that's the reading of the provision on the most extreme side. But this is why contractors and agencies are so worried, because they can read it in such an extreme way. It's written in this way that would give DHS Secretary these emergency powers.
And I mean, since this is obviously a relatively new piece of law, we have to assume that DHS probably hasn't used it yet, or do we know that?
Well, let's be clear. This is bill still working its way through Congress. I don't want anyone to get too worried that written into law yet. But this provision is one of those provisions that people did not take a lot of notice for when Senators Carper, Senator Johnson, Senator Collins, Senator Mikulski introduced, and this bill went through the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee markup, got passed through the committee, and then was added to the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, which potentially could be working its way through Congress over the next month or so. And I think that's why these red flags are being raised now by some in industry and some in government.
And since we're talking about contractor systems, I mean, I guess another issue would be, How does DHS know that there's a substantial threat to systems that they're not operating, that federal agencies aren't even operating, and therefore know that they should go take action?
Well, one thing that agencies do have is some look into contractor systems. They can't go into them per se, but when there's a threat that's out there that's affecting, let's go back to one of the Heartbleed virus, for instance, that type of event, or some of the other big ones that we've seen over the last year or so, I think that's what they're talking about here. Not a specific, hey, Contractor X, you're being attacked, we need to step in. At the same time, the U.S. CERT and also works closely with other vendors, so they do get reports from both agencies and contractors in terms of when there are substantial threats. So I think that there's a lot of information DHS already collects, but what this bill seems to be saying is, okay, not only can you collect that information, but now you can act upon it if you see a substantial threat. And they don't define in the bill, in the provision, what a quote-unquote substantial threat is. And I think that's another piece that worries vendors and agencies alike.
And so as this proceeds through the Hill, do you have any sense of whether these concerns are on lawmakers' radar, whether they're trying to iron them out? And overall, where do we stand with CISA?
So I heard both from members of the Senate Homeland Security and the Government Affairs Committee staff members. And one staff member says, listen, we believe that the so-called overreach by DHS is not really the case. They don't believe the language goes that far. They believe this is very similar to provisions that were introduced back in 2012 by then Senator Joe Lieberman and current Senator Susan Collins. They also say that they fully recognize that DHS does not have all the answers, but there's been problems over the last year, 2 years, where there's been this type of substantial threat, these types of attacks, and DHS has not had both the power or the authority to go in and take action. Now, when they say take action, they don't mean go in and shut down a network, unplug things. They realize, and this is what the staff member tells me, is that the agency chief information officers will know what's best for their network. And DHS's emergency capabilities really are protective and detective capabilities, not necessarily let me go in and move out of the way. I'm here, knock on the door, bust down the door, you know, that type of thing. They're not playing law enforcement.
So I think that's fair. I mean, presumably in a situation where these powers would be needed, DHS would be working with the agency leadership. But is there anything in the bill that would guarantee that?
Well, and I think that's part of why these concerns are being raised, because there's not something that says, you know, DHS shall work. It's the only thing it says is DHS shall notify the agency head that there's a substantial threat and it's going to take action. And a notification is a lot different than asking, right? I think, you know, it's the old ask for forgiveness instead of permission.
Yes.
I think that's kind of what they're getting to here. And I think that also is of concern to contractor networks, because if you think about, Jared, agencies that have moved to the cloud and that cloud data, that where that data lives, is not just in a separate government-only cloud many times. It's in a intermingled cloud with other people's data. So how do you go in and protect a cloud system or system that's in the cloud when you could and only affect government data? How you could end up affecting other governments' data, other industry data, international data, and that's a whole different Pandora's box that you'd have to end up opening. There's no way to really, pull out the government data and protect it separately.
And as someone points out in the notebook, even if you did, that dramatically changes the cost of cloud computing. If you're basically running a government segregated data center within a commercial environment.
And sometimes that does happen. I mean, obviously that is called a hybrid cloud, but those are for really specific instances. And you're right, the government knows they're going to end up paying a little bit more for that hybrid cloud versus that commercial cloud or that government-only cloud. But a lot of people have already started moving to the pure commercial cloud, and I think this bill is kind of playing catch-up now to a certain extent.
Let's get to one other item in the notebook before you go, Jason. Among the many things that happened on October 1st with the start of the new fiscal year was the deadline for agencies to set up their digital services teams. How did agencies do in meeting that deadline?
Well, we don't get a full report on how every agency did, but the Homeland Security Department did step out in front and say, hey, we not only set one up, but we hired someone. They brought on Eric Heisen from the OMB's Digital Services Office to run the DHS Digital Services Office. Now, if you remember, Jared, this goes back to what they call the IT passback. This is during the budget times back in November, December timeframe of 2014, when OMB gives them give agencies directions. And one of those directions was set up a digital services office by October 1st. We know certain agencies have already done that. Veterans Affairs, Commerce, Transportation, EPA, and GSA. Now GSA, DHS now adds to that list. And what's interesting here is these agencies are doing it without the funding that OMB and the White House wanted. And in fact, when I looked through the appropriations bill that are still working through their way through Congress, neither House nor Senate fully funds that $105 million request from President Obama, and only the Senate even mentions this idea of digital services. The House bill doesn't mention it at all. So in many ways, these agencies are out in front of setting up these digital services offices, which people are finding a lot of value and a lot of goodness in. But at the same time, it's hard to get a sense of if every agency has or hasn't.
So it may be that Congress is just waiting to see what goodness comes out of these teams before it actually ponies up some money for them.
I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, a lot of times every administration asks for, hey, can we get this fund for this special thing? And Congress goes, well, we don't want it to become a slush fund, so prove it first and then we'll fund it later. I mean, that's a lot of times. I mean, if you think about over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, that's what we saw with the e-government fund. For the first 5, 7 years of the existence, you're starting in 2002, 2003, Congress gave it $3 million or $5 million. And then all of a sudden, they realized the value that this something called this e-government fund could do. And then all of a sudden, you start seeing the White House and GSA getting $20 million, $30 million. I think very similar role is happening with the digital services. Okay, we like the concept, Congress says, but prove it. And I think that's why some of these agencies, DHS, again, VA, Commerce, Interior, Transportation, EPA, GSA, others are starting to prove out this concept of bringing in these really smart people who understand how to make the the services that agencies provide to citizens more effective, more efficient, better in terms of customer service, but also take what they do internally that's maybe not necessarily customer-facing and improve that just as well.
All right. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. Thanks as always, Jason.
Always a pleasure.